All right, well, I guess we'll get started at 6:30. I'd like to welcome everybody out. Thanks for coming. This is our December RAC meeting, December 4, 2017, held in Green River, Utah, southeastern RAC. We'll go through, I guess I probably ought to talk about the procedures and make sure. We'll go through, the division will make their presentation, and then after the division makes presentation, we'll have questions from the RAC, and then we'll have open up questions from the audience after that. And then following that, we'll have comments from the audience. If you have a comment, make sure you get a comment card and fill it out and bring it up here. And keep our questions simple if we can. And the question period, just make sure it's questions and not trying to interrogate or anything like that. If you have anything that you want to elaborate on, make sure you put down a comment card and we'll take care of that in the comment section. And I guess the first thing we've got is the approval of the agenda and minutes from last meeting. Any discussion about that? Entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda in the minutes.
We have a motion. Todd and Kirk seconded it. All in favor? Any opposed? Looks like it's unanimous. Okay, we have the Wildlife Board meeting update. And I wasn't there, so Chris is going to take care of that for us.
Yeah, good evening. Welcome. Merry Christmas. There's a Christmas present on the table for you. You can take one of these little coolers home with you. And then there's lots of candy. Chocolate will keep you happy throughout the night, hopefully. Whatever's left at the end of the night, you can take home and give to your kids or something. But we appreciate your service on Iraq, and so this little thing is just a token of that appreciation. So we hope you have a great Christmas and holiday season. So thanks for spending an evening in December. I know how crazy December can be, so thanks for spending an evening in December here at our RAC meeting. So Trish Hedin is not here tonight. She's at a cross-country meet in San Francisco. She runs a Moab running club, and they went to a race over there for the weekend. So she regrets not being here. She did attend our Wildlife Board meeting, and she represented you guys very well and brought up the motions and concerns and thoughts that you guys had and were passed at the RAC meeting. So I'll try to do my best to report on the meeting and maybe answer any questions if you have any. I did send out an email a week or two ago that updated you on the bison issue and also sent you the motion summary, the draft motion summary that was that came from the Wildlife Board. So. But maybe I'll quickly run through some of the things that were passed. The waterfowl recommendations. Oh, I should say, too, our director apologized for the long agenda and said that that won't happen again. So I hope that's the case. It was a killer agenda. I applaud Trish and you guys for powering through it, though. I think the meeting only lasted 3.5 hours. The meeting in the northeastern region went till 1 a.m. So... So good job with the meeting management last time. Our waterfowl recommendations that we passed here unanimously, the board also passed unanimously. Non-game mammals rule that involved the prairie dog issue, that also passed unanimously at the RAC and at the board. And then we get into the bucks, bulls, and once in a lifetime recommendations, and like it happened here at our RAC at the board meeting, they broke that down into numerous motions. Maybe I'll address the bison issue first. The last few years as an agency, as we've gone to different RAC meetings and we've heard different recommendations come out of the RAC meetings and different motions come out of the RAC meetings, there are times as an agency where we'll hear a motion or recommendation. And if it's more of a social issue, then there's not any necessarily big biological concerns that we have. We oftentimes, or you'll see us in the past, and we did it this time, adopt some of the recommendations and use that as our recommendation to the Wildlife Board. And that's what happened at this last go around. If you remember, this RAC voted to remove the Range Creek area out of the bison hunt boundary. And we took that idea back to, as an agency, and decided that that is a good idea, and that's something that we proposed to the Wildlife Board. Brad Crompton, also at the Wildlife Board, gave a presentation about the bison issue and the past and what the current situation is and what the future strategies are going to be. And so we were able to give that presentation and clarify some things and take what came out of this RAC and use that as part of our recommendation. And the Wildlife Board did approve that portion of the Bucks, Bulls, Once in a Lifetime recommendation. They approved so the Range Creek area is no longer part of the hunt unit. So when bison come into Range Creek or the Range Creek area, there's two things that we're going to do as an agency. One is we're going to immediately call the tribe and request that they herd their bison back to their property. And we've done that in the past. You get a helicopter, you push the bison down Range Creek, up the Green River, across the river, back up on top of their tribal lands, and they have some holding facilities there. And best case scenario, they sell them off to slaughter. So that's what we're going to do first and foremost, is ask the tribe and request the tribe to do that. And the second thing we'll start doing is calling hunters. And we'll call hunters. Every time we have a draw, there's an alternate list that comes those people who didn't draw but are kind of next in line. And so we'll pull the alternate list, and we'll call those people off the alternate list and give them a description of what they're going into. They'll need, horses and hiking, and kind of paint the scenario for them. If they will give them the opportunity to go hunt bison in the Range Creek area, we'll work with the University of Utah and the museum folks there and help them get better access to those bison. And then the good thing we're able to do now, though, is if they don't harvest the bison, we can give their points back to them. And so there hasn't been a shortage of interest for this hunt, but that'll definitely alleviate some people's concerns, because as you know, some years access is impossible, snow flies and we're unable to get into Range Creek. But there's a few different strategies that I identified in that paper that I gave you last week too. Improving Turtle Canyon is still a strategy we're committed to and committed to putting money towards. The other thing we're going to do is work with our partners, Department of Ag, and look at some gates and some fences to try to prevent bison from coming into some of the canyons. We realize that that's not a necessarily a foolproof solution. They can still get around those areas, and bison will still move and get where they want to, but it'll deter them for a little bit, or deter them to coming into some canyons. So those are the strategies we're doing. The Wildlife Board also passed the motion to create a bison. Let me look at the wording they used. A working group modeled after the Henry Mountain Bison Working Group. And so that's something that passed unanimously. And so as an agency, we'll be working with the landowners and the Department of Ag and BLM and the university to develop this working group so we can meet together often and implement these strategies that we've identified and talked about. So since our last meeting too, we did call the tribe. They did get the helicopter, and they actually pushed 275 bison out of Range Creek and the Green River Canyons. They're kind of scattered throughout that area. They pushed 275 bison back up onto the tribal lands. I wish I could say that all the majority of those 275 were sold off to slaughter. That's not the case. The last update that I heard was that 57 of those bison were sold off to slaughter. As they rounded them up and tried to push them up to the pens, bison got scattered, and their holding facilities are only so big, and so this go-around, only 57 were removed. Mm-hmm. But that's 57 less, and that's a lot more than we can do with hunts. So we'll continue to do that as throughout the winter, so if they come back. So that's the bison issue. Maybe I'll quickly go on to the other items here that we discussed. The multi-season elk hunt passed 4-2, with the caveat that they asked the division to conduct a survey gauging permit holder success rate and weapon types and provide a report back to the Wildlife Board next year. The early season rifle hunt, the early season general rifle hunt proposal also passed, but they excluded the Panguitch Lake unit. So next year we will have an early season rifle hunt in seven units: the Chalk Creek, the Fillmore, the Camas, the 9 Mile, the Pine Valley, the Plateau Fish Lake, and the Zion unit. We'll all have that early rifle season hunt. They also discussed at great length, as was discussed here, the proposal to have a limited entry deer hunt on general season units that meet or are above buck to doe ratio objectives. That proposal did not pass at 3 of the 5 racks. It did pass at our rack, as you because you accepted the remaining recommendations as proposed. And so had a lot of discussion. In the end, our agency had an alternate recommendation. We said, hey, if you don't feel comfortable with this recommendation, here's another recommendation to consider. And the Wildlife Board ended up passing the alternate recommendation, and that was provided by the Mule Deer Management Committee, that allows for late muzzleloader limited entry units that exceed the buck to doe ratio. They also keep last year's units minus the Plateau and Boulder and Kaparowitz, but add the Beaver and North Slope units. So I think the difference there was, instead of meets, what was passed was it has to exceed the buck to doe ratio objective. Other things that passed, the cactus buck hunt and the Ponsagon passed. I know this RAC talked about two things I'll address right now. One is the boundary change in the green in the 9 Mile unit and the Manti unit that would allow people who live in Green River to hunt both the valley and also the desert, if I understand it correctly. And then the other thing was to create a South Book Cliffs late season archery hunt. The board decided was that those are two pretty huge proposals that probably need to go through, that should go through the Mule Deer Working Group Committee and then go to all of the RACs. And so they heard that concern. It was presented, but it's something that they didn't want to move on without going through the right process. So there was no action on those things. And maybe I will just say, from a division's perspective, the Green River 9 Mile Manti boundary change, the last several years we've been trying to align our boundaries, our mule deer boundaries with our bighorn sheep boundaries, and have all the boundaries be consistent throughout this different species. And so this would deviate from that. And so as an agency, it's not an idea that we love, But of course, ideas that we don't love get passed all the time, and that's what this process is for. I just thought I'd throw that out there. Let's see. The statewide pronghorn management plan passes presented, so did the moose plan. And then they also reviewed the Jump Creek CWMU variance, and that passed. I can go into more detail if you have questions, or you can talk to me after the meeting. And then the Diamond Mountain Landowner Association variance request passed, and so did the Boat Cliffs Landowner Association issue. That all passed. So that was a lot to report. Hopefully you reviewed the motion summary that I sent out last week. If there's any questions about any of that, maybe I can try to answer them, but or we can talk after the meeting. Any questions about that?
When I looked at that motion summary, I think the Wildlife Board amended. They did grant a variance to the Book Cliffs Landowner Association, but I think they amended the permit numbers from what we passed out of the rack here. I think what was passed out of the rack here was the what the landowners were requesting with the elk numbers, and I think that the Wildlife Board reduced that, but they split the difference between the recommendations out of the rack and what the division was recommending.
Okay. Kevin, you have anything to add?
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Chris. We're here for the regional update, and I guess that's Chris again.
Yeah. All right.
I'm going to be busy tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to sit down in 5 minutes and be done for the night. So, things are slowing down a little bit for their aquatic section. Their surveys for the year are finished, but they're analyzing data, and they're going to workshops and doing some career development. These are some of the things that they've been working on the last few weeks. Our habitat section is busier than ever this time of year, though. So this is the time of the year that most of the habitat restoration work that happens in our state is implemented. They try to get the ground turned and seed on the ground before the snow flies. They'll do some in the spring as well, but this time is the busiest time of year. The group that approves these watershed restoration initiative projects or these habitat projects is UPCD. It's the Utah Partners for Conservation and Development. This time of year, they're writing proposals, entering them into a database, and then this UPCD group meets several times this winter to review projects, try to collaborate better with each other, and eventually approve projects and then rank projects. But some things that are happening on our division properties, we're looking at planting some shrubs at Desert Lake and creating some better upland game habitat there. And then on the Matheson Wetland in Moab, we're looking at a prescribed fire next fall. And so we're writing that plan and meeting with partners now to figure out how we can implement that. Our law enforcement guys are busy, of course, as well. They're always making cases. Trapping season is in full swing. That's what's keeping these guys busy. They're responding to poaching calls all the time. They had one last night, actually. I'm allowed to say this. Maybe I'll say it. Someone shot 3 or 4 deer last night. So they were eating their shrubs, and they got mad, and they shot 3 or 4 deer. So people keep our law enforcement officers busy, and they're responding to things and making great cases. So if you've seen some of our officers in the last few weeks, they have facial hair, which is against policy, but they have the ability for November and December to buy a beard card. They pay, $25 towards this charity, and the Utah Conservation Officers Association matches that. So $50 goes towards this charity, and with that money, they buy coats for local kids. And so all of our officers, because they're allowed to, for 2 months, grow facial hair, they all participate in that activity. And so just this week, our officers received those coats and they're handing them out, and it's been fun to see. Our outreach section, Walt and Morgan have been busy as well. They're preparing for some clinics that we're doing this winter. The last few years, we've done these clinics in the Price area. We don't have any dates or locations for sure yet, but we're thinking about doing an ice fishing clinic in Moab and maybe using Ken's Lake, and then also having our predator clinic down in the southern part of the region as well. And I'm not sure about turkey. You doing that down here too? Okay, maybe we've done them up in the Price area for the last few years, and our attendance has been really good. People are interested in increasing their knowledge and learning how to do these different activities, and so we thought we'd bring it down south. Our state NASP tournament. NASP is, I don't know what the acronym means. Okay, so the National Archery in the Schools program. I know what it is. I just didn't know what the acronym meant. But throughout the region, throughout the state, we have different schools with the archery equipment in their schools. And either during after school or before school or during the school itself, kids of all, of different ages and skill levels get together and they learn about archery and they shoot at targets. And so that statewide tournament is February 10th, and that attracts thousands of kids from all over the state to the convention center in downtown Salt Lake City. Same place and time as that the expo goes on, and so it's a big draw and a big event. Our wildlife section is busy as well, very busy. They've been doing bighorn sheep transplants this week, actually. The bighorn sheep in the Zion units are clean and healthy, and there's a lot of them. There's too many of them. So that we're receiving some of those Zion sheep, and their genetics are really good, too. They grow some really nice rams in that unit. And so we're taking, I believe, 50 sheep from Zion and transplanting them to the North San Juan. They transport them in trailers to the height area, and then once we get to height, we'll take the bighorn sheep that are in these little pods or these little cages, maybe four or five in each little cage, and we'll string them up to a helicopter, and we'll take them to a remote area in the North San Juan and release them out there. And so for several years, that population will be protected and allowed to just thrive, and then of course they'll move to areas that are accessible and visible, and they'll be accessible to sportsmen as well. We're doing a lot of deer captures as part of our migration initiative and our deer study. So we'll capture deer, put radio GPS collars on them, and then watch their, and research their movements. And so we're doing that this year in the San Juan, the Book Cliffs, and the Manti. And then, of course, we're doing our annual deer classifications this time of year, too. With that, I'll take any questions, and if I can't answer them, I'll ask my guys. Okay, thanks.
All right, well, thanks, Chris. Move on to our last agenda item. These are Black Bay recommendations. Again, remind anybody, if you have comments, get a comment card up here. And Darren DeBlois will take care of it for us.
Can you hear me okay on this? If I don't... Okay. Righty-tighty, lefty. There we go. Good evening, everybody. I appreciate the opportunity. So tonight I'll be presenting our 2018 Black Bear recommendations. And I thought what I'd do is begin, if I use this, if it'll work. Okay. I know there's a couple of new members of the RAC, so I thought I'd just do a really brief overview of bear management in Utah and kind of how we came to where we are now. First of all, the Division of Wildlife Resources mission is to serve the people of Utah as trustee and guardian of the state's wildlife. We actively manage bear populations in the state. That is, that we We take actions to manipulate population numbers across the state depending on the needs that we have on a particular unit. One part of that is hunting. We support hunting as a part of management. We feel like there's some advantages that we gain by doing this. First is it builds and maintains an interest in the support for bears. And one of the reasons that we manage bears today is because sportsmen petitioned the legislature in 1967 to put bears on under protected status so that we could manage for bears and grow populations. It also allows our biologists to meet their management parameters. And finally, sometimes bears and people come into conflict, and hunting is a tool that we use to address some of those situations. So as I mentioned before, we've been managing bears in the state for 50 years, since 1967 when conservationists and sportsmen requested that bears be a protected species in the state. About mid-80s, 1986, we were having a lot of discussions about the fact that we didn't know a whole lot about what bears were doing in the state. We didn't know a lot about life history. There was a gap in knowledge, and so in the mid-80s, we started a concerted effort and did a lot of scientific research into bears in the state. And in 1998-99, using that data, we put together a black bear discussion group that wrote the first black bear management plan for the state. In 2011, we reviewed that plan and actually wrote a new plan, and that's the plan we're currently under. So the plan started in 2011, it ends in 2013, and we look at bear data on a three-year basis. So every 3 years, we revisit the plan and see if we need to make any adjustments. The last time we did that was in 2015, and we did make some significant changes to hunting opportunities and permits and added quite a bit of diversity to how we hunt bears, and so you'll see some of that in the data. So what does the plan say? First of all, the goal of the plan is to maintain a healthy bear population, both in existing habitats and allow the expansion of bears into habitats that are conducive to bears, but at the same time taking into account human safety, economic concerns, and other wildlife species. And so what's a healthy bear population? We define that as a population with proportion of breeding age animals that will maintain population levels consistent with habitat and also maintains genetic variability. So given those broad objectives, we have management strategy. In the interest of time, and to spare any confusion that I might cause, I'm not going to get real deep into this tonight, but if you have questions, I'd be happy to get into more detail. But just a thumbnail sketch is we manage bears in under three different strategies: light harvest, moderate harvest, and liberal harvest. Liberal being, you're actually trying to reduce bear populations. These units might be units where we've got problems with livestock depredation. You know, we're trying to not get rid of all bears, but maybe keep the bear population a little lower to address those concerns. Light harvest would be a unit where we have bear habitat, we don't have conflicts, we're starting to see bears show up, and we might want to let those populations grow. Moderate is kind of in between, and most of our units fall into that category. Depending on local needs and what the unit needs are, that could either be a steady population, keeping the population level, or even allowing or a little bit of a growth rate or a decline, depending on individual units. So the two things we look at are the number of adult males in the harvest that are 5 years old or older. That helps to ensure that we've got old age classes out there. And then the females in the harvest. So depending on the number of females you take, you're either allowing a population to grow, maintaining it, or causing it to decline. Last year at the board meeting and through the RAC process, there were a few things that came up that the board asked us to address this time around. They weren't action items, but they were things that were identified, some from this region as well. So I just thought I'd quickly go through these. We did put a committee together with the following. The following organizations are invited to come and talk about these issues. And we met a couple of times. The second time we had more participation than the first. We had a really good discussion, and you'll see some of the recommendations tonight came directly from those discussions. But the back to what the items were. The first, there was some concern. There seems to always be concern, you know, with predators. How do we evaluate how many there are? Now, if you remember in the management plan, we don't. That's not something we manage to. We don't have X number of bears in the objective. But it is good to have some idea, at least, of your trend, so you kind of know if you're growing or going down. And so we talked about ways to look at that. We actually took our harvest data, and we have some population estimates I'll show you tonight statewide. Some other things we're looking at is increasing our collaring effort. One thing you can do is if you collar sows, visit them in the dens early in the spring, and document whether they're having cubs or not. Bears can be relatively slow reproducers, especially in, you know, dry years when there's not a lot of food available. And if you can detect those birth pulses, that can help to refine your estimates. BYU's actually working on a different thing. Another thing to get a population estimate is by marking an animal and then trying to recapture it. And one way you can do that is by using DNA. So you can, if you can pull hair, you can identify an individual bear, and if you can get it back through. And we've tried this in the past, and it's worked pretty well on populations where we have dense bear numbers. But BYU is looking at seeing if they can come up with a better scent lure. You know, we kind of use these fruit scented oils to bring bears into these barbed wire enclosures so they snag their hair. They're actually working with their chemistry department, see if they can isolate some of those chemicals that actually really attracts bears. And so we're going to see if maybe that's a way that get a little bit more reliable estimate. They ask us to review. Last year, it was requested that we mirror the San Juan and La Salle's hunting seasons on the book cliffs. And the board asked us to take a look at that. We had a lot of really good discussions about that. We're going to talk about that more tonight. So I'm just going to let that take place instead of getting too far into the details on that. We talked about a preference point instead of for restricted pursuit seasons. So on the book cliffs, La Salle's and San Juan, we restrict the number of people who can take dogs to field and pursue bears in the summer. And but you have to draw those tags. And so there was a request that we look at giving people who didn't draw 1 year the preference point to draw the following year. You'll see a recommendation along those lines tonight. Another thing, this came from this region, was to look at pack size restrictions for dogs. There's some concerns about the numbers of dogs afield. We talked to our law enforcement section, and this is one that would be really difficult to enforce. Even on the restricted pursuit seasons, it's difficult in the field to figure out who belongs to what dog. And we felt like one way we could, if we've got problems along these lines where people are having conflicts with a lot of dogs in the field, could implement those restricted pursuit seasons. So that would limit the number of people that could be afield, and then by default would reduce the number of dogs. The La Salle San Juan pursuit experiment, this is something that the region's been doing now for 3 years. They had some concerns that pursuit pressure might be pushing bears. They had a question. They didn't know if maybe pursuit pressure was pushing bears during the summer into places like Moab, where normally you wouldn't see bears go. It was a question the region had. So they reduced the pressure on the San Juan, no, the La Salle's, and left the San Juan at the same number of permits. They've done that for 3 years. This year we're going to propose they switch that so we can look at it through time and see if there's any difference. And you'll see that in the recommendations. Finally, there was some concern about using harvest objective hunting on public land units. The way the plan reads is that we'll avoid using harvest objective on units that are dominated by public land. This is primarily about the Wasatch Unit, and you'll see a recommendation along those lines as well tonight. So getting into the numbers, there's the last 4 years of success rates and harvest for bears. The 2017 numbers are, as of the end of October, we, just because of the way this timeline works out and getting stuff out to the racks, we still have hunts going on during the end of that process. And so this is pretty close. It's not going to change a lot, but we could still have some late season bears come in and change the numbers a little bit. But the last 4 years, success has been about 50%, which is interesting. I mentioned that we changed the way we do things quite a bit in 2015, and it hasn't seemed to have made a huge difference in terms of overall success. But you can see that we've also increased the numbers of bears that are being taken across the state. One of the reasons, well, I'll get to that in just a second. So this is the same thing, only in a graph form. The orange line here are the number of permits that we have issued since about 1990. So you can see that those numbers have increased. If you look at 2015, you can see there's a big jump. And we added a lot of low success opportunities, spot and stalk, where you're in the field, you can't use bait or dogs, and so it's kind of, if you can find a bear, you can take it. So you see permits jump quite a bit that year. The red line are the number of bears that have actually been harvested, and this is just sport harvest. This doesn't include bears that might be in melon fields or eating sheep or something like that that had to be removed for those reasons. And you can see the trend there. This is our population estimate. So this is a minimum adult population estimate. So this is bears that are 2 years of age or older. And this is based on the bears that we see checked into us every year that are actually harvested. And the way you can do that is if you have a four-year-old bear that's being checked in this year, you know it was alive and 3 years old the year before and 2 years old before that. And you kind of add back through time. By compressing all the adults into the two-year-olds and older age class, it allows us to get far enough forward in time that we can get an estimate up till 2016. Probably the actual number here could change. So, it's just bumping up against 3,500 adults. But again, this is just based on what actually shows up. This doesn't account for bears hit by cars, bears that die in the woods that we're unaware of. And so that number's probably higher than that. We're confident this is a minimum. But what won't change is the trend over time. So that line may move up and down the graph, but the trend indicates that we have a growing bear population. It looks like over the last 3 years we may have started to level off a little bit, but you can see back in 09 and 10 we had kind of the same trend, and then it started growing again. So we'll keep an eye on that. The plan is designed to take that into account. So if we start seeing a decline in population, you'd see permit recommendations that would take that into account. Another thing that we look at and are concerned about is depredation versus sport harvest. So if we've got a growing bear population, do we have growing problems with livestock owners and producers, sunflowers and melons and things like that? The yellow line here is the number of bears that have been taken in depredation situations. And you can see the last, 10 years, it's been fairly steady. It jumps around. In years where we have poor, acorn and berry crops, you tend to see hungry bears showing up places that you don't want them, and then it'll drop off the next year if you have good production. But the sport harvest has increased. So the take home of this is that as bear populations have been growing, we haven't seen market increases in depredation, although we do address those when it occurs. But most of that opportunity has been given to sportsmen to harvest those those bears with greater numbers of bears. So let's get into hunting seasons. These are our recommendations for 2018. The dates here, the first date, spring limited entry, this is a dog's no bait season, spring season, March 31st through June 1st. The summer limited entry is a bait or spot and stock opportunity. We're recommending a change to this season. That season last year would have begun June 2nd, so the day after the hound season stopped, the bait season would begin. What we're recommending is that we allow that hunt to begin a week earlier, so it overlap the end of the dog season, but that there not be any early baiting. So up until now, you could start putting baits out 2 weeks early. We're recommending that there be no early baiting, but that once you put your baits out on May 26, you can go ahead and start hunting. That was one of the things that the group discussed. This is a little bit of a compromise on what the group talked about. But everybody there felt pretty good about the overlap. The houndsmen wanted to make sure that if there are any conflicts here, that they get their, they don't get cut back, that they get to keep their season, and everybody agreed that they could do that. So the fall limited entry, no changes here, just changes for the calendar. So these would be the same seasons. And that's both dogs and bait concurrently. There's a multi-season opportunity. That just means if you draw that permit, you can hunt all of those seasons we just looked at. And so the dates are specific depending on the unit. And then there's a harvest objective opportunity as well. And this is just where we have a set number of bears that we need taken out of an area. Permits are unlimited. You can go buy a permit over the counter and go hunt the area. But once the bears have been taken, then the unit closes. That's March 31st through June 1st in the spring. And then there's a special opportunity in the fall on the 9 mile, which is a spot and stock only in September and October. There are a few units with alternate seasons, and they're the Book Cliffs, Los Sals, and San Juan. So on the Book Cliffs, we're recommending that the fall limited entry season be an archery only season from August 6th through September 7th. 2018, and that dogs and bait be allowed October 1st through November 15th. That's not a change, that's just adjusting for the calendar. The Little Creek Roadless is that wilderness area, same archery season, but spot and stock in the spring and in the fall there. On the La Salle and the San Juan, again, this is the same as it currently is. So August 11th through 14th, actually the season is August 11th through September 24th, but from the 15th to the 24th, no dogs. That's when the limited entry, any weapon, bull elk season is going on. And then again, November 3rd through November 15th. And then a spot and stock only hunt from October 2nd through October 23rd. Moving on to individual unit permit recommendations. So I'll just point out the things that changed here, and if you have questions about specific units, we can come back. So in the northeastern region, we're recommending an additional 3 permits in the Little Creek Roadless area. In the northern region, an additional 2 permits on the Chalk Creek Camas North Slope Summit unit. That's a bunch of units that are all combined into one, low bear densities on those units. Central Mountains Nebo, an additional 3 permits. Wasatch Mountains West Central, an additional 10, but also that's one of the unit I mentioned that was a harvest objective. We're recommending we switch that to limited entry and increase the permits on that unit. The southeastern region has the biggest density of bears, and so that's why you'll see the biggest increases here. So increases on all the units, 7 additional on the Manti North, 7 on the Manti South, San Rafael North, 25 on the La Salle, an additional 9 on the 9 Mile, and an additional 25 on the San Juan. In the southern region, 2 additional on the Beaver, 2 on the Panguitch, 2 on the Paunsagant, 2 on the Boulder, And this is, out of all of these all fall within the management plan parameters. And I actually had a handout that kind of showed you the bracket that you could adjust from 0 to 5, for example, on a given unit. Everything falls within that except for the plateau, and that's because of the fires they had there. They wanted to be conservative. They probably should have increased by 3 under the plan, and they only wanted to increase by 1 because they're not sure what their habitat's going to be looking like in the short term. Pursuit units, or pursuit on these units, these are the season dates. Again, no change here, just changes for the calendar year. There's a spring opportunity, a summer and fall opportunity. And then on these three units, we have restricted pursuit. So that means you have to draw that permit to pursue, and there's a limited number of people that can go afield on these units, Book Cliffs, La Salle's, and San Juan. Same season dates as the others, but you've got to draw a tag to go. And along with that, we talked about implementing a preference point. When we looked at the odds, so the way a preference point works is if you don't draw in year one, you get a preference point, and the next year, only people with preference points get drawn first. And given the interest in these permits, we figured it'd probably take about 20 years for you to ever draw a second time before you burn through all those. And so we're recommending a bonus point system for restricted pursuit units. The way the bonus point system works is half however the permits you issue just are straight draw. So every year you got a chance, but half of them would go to people with the most points. Along with that, we're recommending a 2-year waiting period. So if you draw out, you'd have to wait 2 years before you could put in again. And we're recommending we amend the rule, the bonus point rule, which is R-657-62, to make that change. In addition, I can't remember, Chris, if you mentioned this, but on the part of the big game process that we just went through, they made some recommended changes to archery equipment requirements. We're just recommending that the bear rule mirror those changes that the board adopted. So 40 pounds to 30, no arrow weight restriction. It mirrors that so that if you're in the field in the fall with a bow, you don't have to have a deer bow and a bear bow. They can all be configured the same. And since we had the rule open, we made a few little changes. Prima facie evidence, references to probable cause, that's just about, you know, burden of proof, and that's something that our attorney general representative wanted, is trying to clean up throughout all of our rules, and added a citation that refers to bonus points to refer back to the bonus point rule. So, in summary, change the summer bait season from May 26th to June 29th with no early baiting. According to management plan guidelines, 860 total bear permits. That's an increase of 102 over last year. Bonus points for restricted pursuit seasons with a 2-year waiting period, and the archery and crossbow changes to reflect the big game rule changes. And that's all I have.
Thanks, Darren. Questions from the rack?
Yeah, I'll be rambling here for a while.
All right.
When you gave the handout here, it shows percentage of males and all that on your stuff. Mm-hmm. How come you don't have an age structure there? How's your age population going? I know you said you want to put it into the 2-year and above.
Right, yeah.
But I know you know the ages of it done. What's the ages doing? Are we going
We're
down?
Seeing,
I mean,
it depends on the unit. So we do it unit by unit, and this is kind of compiled statewide, so it kind of depends on the unit. I think overall we've seen, similar to that population trend, we've seen sort of a leveling off in ages.
Leveling off, or are you having a dip?
I'm pretty sure it leveled off over the last 3 years. I can get the numbers for sure. I've got them here, but I think average age is, I probably ought to look at it. Go ahead. Do you have any more questions, and I'll look it up?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to see that. One of the other things when you're talking about your group, and maybe the houndsman will get into that, is your late fall hunt and that, where you have the minimum tags. And do you have, and maybe this is more for your law enforcement, where the guy draws his tag and then he has 5 buddies show up with all their dogs. Have you solved anything? Did you solve anything?
Right. I think that'd be a good question. question for the region. You can talk, maybe they can talk a little bit to those specific units and what they're seeing, because we did have a lot of complaints this year during the archery season. One thing we're recommending is a reduction in the permits in the fall. In the past, seems like when those fall permits were around 5, we seem to have less conflict. But this year we had about 60 archery hunters complain to our officers when they're in field about dogs in the field at the same time, and about 30 on the San Juan. But Guy or somebody, do you want to talk about guys, people with their friends showing up with dogs, and you know, is that an issue? And they're all looking at each other like.
I was going to have one of them come up here anyway.
So it's always an issue because we've always got, when someone's got one permit, they've always got 4 or 5 trucks out there. But then there's also 6, 7, 8 dogs in that one truck. For the actual hunt, I don't believe there's actually a number that we restrict it to. No, we were trying in the past to restrict the pursuit season to the 8 dogs. That's never really been an issue, but during the hunt, there's always a lot of dogs out there. However, most of the houndsmen that we do talk to, they don't put all their dogs out there, it seems, except when there's a big bear. And the little bear, they'll usually pull off, but if it's a big, good bear, they want to make sure they get that bear. Does that kind of answer your question?
Oh, okay. And then there's another one here. Where are you, law enforcement?
Yeah.
Yeah. When Adam, and I'll just use Adam as an example. Adam's a good guy. He's picking up quick. When he first showed up after the hunt's closed, he said, yeah, I stopped on a lion hunter in Willow Basin. They had a lion up in there and had a lion caught. Well, no, they didn't. They were bear hunting on a predatory management unit on a lion tag. So have you guys got anything to deal with the loophole on the San Juan, La Salle? And all I have to do is have a lion tag. I'm going hunting. And what are you going to do about it? And it's happening. So tell me where that's at. And have you guys addressed that? I mean, it's getting bigger and bigger.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is. And, yeah, we have dealt with a lot of issues in that aspect. The best that I can tell you is we do it by case-by-case scenario. And
I can tell you from being in law enforcement, I don't think there's a thing you can do with it.
There's not, really. We if they've got a valid permit right there, we got to let them, we try to take it by their word, but, well, you're law enforcement, you know how that works.
No.
And, you know, it's a discussion that we need to have on a higher level, probably, and especially with our chief in Salt Lake and with the director's office.
And also looking at your graph here and your depredation and that, 102 tag increase is huge when you have 860 tags. Your depredation's not up, so...
No, it was up this year. The biggest increase in depredation this year was bears on sheep. We had to prorate this year. You know, we have $180,000 that we pay to guys on confirmed losses. We had to prorate this year at about 83% on the dollar, and that was largely due to bear depredation. Now that's centralized on specific units, and so you know, with bears, there's a few ways you can address it. One is to, you know, try and keep populations at an acceptable level, but also work with wildlife services, and we try to work closely and get individual bears. But that was a concern this year, and that's something that that did enter into our considerations on permits.
And I guess I'll hit one more thing here that I've seen a lot is your unlicensed outfitters. Why do we even entertain having a system where they have to deal with Doppel and license themselves when you guys pretty much have a hands off, we're not going to worry about it. because we don't have the time. It's Doppel's issue, and Doppel don't deal with it. Right. So why do people that I know, like GT, they pay their stuff, they do the legal outfitters. Yes. Why should they do it?
Right.
Why? Because there's no teeth in it,
right.
And it's a wildlife issue, yeah. And I'd like someone here to explain to me why.
Yeah. One thing, I'm going to steal the houndsman's thunder a little bit. You know, they're going to talk a little bit about season structure changes that they'd like to recommend. But we felt like after our discussions with them that there are other issues like this that need to be addressed. And our recommendations, the reason we didn't change anything this year is we feel like we need to have some kind of, you know, bear summit, something where we get people together and put all of these concerns on the board and say, how are we going to address these things? You know, there's still issues with pursuit. There's, like you said, guiding, all of those things, and see if maybe we can hammer through some of that stuff. So, again, we'll get an opportunity to talk about season structure, but regardless of how that goes, I think obviously there's still issues on the table that I think warrant a lot of stakeholders getting in a room and talking about. So we'd still like to commit to do that.
Is this not the start of the next stretch of the bear management plan?
It is, and I part of that's my fault, you know, being new. I didn't realize that we were in that third year until we were pretty late in the process. And so there were some things that literally came up, you know, at the last minute that we realized we should have probably talked about in the group that hadn't gotten proper, we hadn't looked at thoroughly. And so, again, we'd like to wait a year and address that stuff. But this is a public process. So let's.
I understand that. Yeah. So maybe you can tell me who is the ultimate decision on licensing outfitters. Is that DWR, DNR?
I think it's in statute. I think it's in statute. And so
So does statute need to be changed so that someone actually enforces it?
Yeah, I'm not in enforcement. I don't know.
I know that.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how we've been enforcing it.
You're the guy on the hot seat.
I know I am. Yeah, I know. I wish I had a better answer. I'm afraid I don't. So I understand that when you've got another agency, and I've actually, you know, we've dealt with Doppel on other things for drug licensing, and they got a lot of balls in the air over there. And so, you know, if it's something they don't know what's going on, they're not familiar with the issues, then yeah, maybe it doesn't get the enforcement that needs. So that's definitely something we need to look at, it sounds like.
Yeah, somebody else's turn.
I'll still get those ages. I had to set up a hot spot here, so see how tech savvy I can be.
Any other questions from the rack?
Darren, can you explain this a little better? I'm not certain I understand it. You have a minimum and maximum adjustment.
Right. So this is like a big, huge table, and I tried to condense it. So what you've got in the first the first two columns, the percent adult male and percent female, those are the management parameters that we're looking at. Now those will vary depending the targets vary depending on how you manage an individual unit, but those are the numbers. So percent adult males are the percent of adults in the harvest that were 5 years old or older. The percent females are the number of females, just all females, that showed up in the harvest. So the way the plan works is if you're within your target range, you can adjust depending on the management strategy. So that percent adjustment is how you're allowed to adjust permits according to the plan, 20%, 20-40. So just doing the math on that, where you currently are, what you can adjust. So the minimum is the minimum you can adjust, and for a lot of those it's zero. So you could stay the same according to the plan. The max is the absolute max number of permits that you could adjust that year. And this is all based on a three-year running average, so it's based on the previous 3 years of harvest data. So on the beaver, the biologist has the option to adjust between 0 and 4 permits. And they just adjusted 2 on that specific unit. So for the LaSalle's, which is, you know, one of our premier units, they're both both management parameters looks like they were good, so they were able to adjust between 20% and 40%, and so they needed to either go between 24 and 50 permits. They opted for 25 on those units. So they're just above the minimum adjustment that the plan requires.
Okay, so the 24 permits is 20%.
Right.
50 is 40%. Okay, right.
Does depredation play any part in that whatsoever?
It does. When we consider how we want to manage a unit, that's one. So whether it's a liberal unit or a moderate unit.
But say you mentioned you had quite a few problems last year with sheep deprivation. I know you had quite a few problems in this valley for farmers.
Yeah.
How do you adjust for that?
Depredation take would be on and above this. So if this is just sport take. So with bears, there's a couple things that seem to weigh in with depredation. You might get an individual bear that figures out killing sheep is a good way to go.
Understandable.
Our strategy there is to take care of that bear, and by that I mean get wildlife services out there and take the bear. Same thing with you know, melons and sunflowers. You know, if we've got a bear that keeps coming back, our first option is to try to move them according to policy. We do have a policy on how we respond to these things, but if it's a habitual bear that comes back, then we'd do a lethal removal. So
So what happens when you have numbers of issues in that same area?
We would adjust permits accordingly. So you'll see on some of these units, like the Manti, they're making their maximum adjustments. So they're doing two things. They're handling specific problems, but they're also recommending as much as they can according to the plan in order to try to suppress that population. So. So I've got ages here. Thanks, Guy. Let me just orient myself here. Looks like average age last year was 6.1. And that's actually a little bit higher. It's been about 5.5. It came up last year. Averaged over since about 2000, it's about 6.2. So it kind of, it's been high, it's been low, it's been high.
Any other questions from the rack?
How do you decide how to allocate those, like, let's say on the San Juan, the 25 tags across the season? And kind of piggybacking on that question, are you noticing that they're taking a lot more females with a spot and stock tag versus bait or a dog where they can get a better look?
Yeah, it's up to the biologists in the region how they want to divide those tags up. One of the other issues that kind of came up this year is for a unit like the LaSalle's, it's a lot of permits, and they increased by 25, 15 of those went into that spot and stock season, which is a relatively low success hunt. But we also need to take bears off of that. You know, it's got a good, healthy, growing population, and so, you know, how do you set up a season structure to do that? And so those are some things that we'll be looking at, you know, with the region and across the state. So that's how we allocate permits. What was your second question about? I remember about females. Yeah, the best way, the most selective ways to take bears and ensure that you're taking older males, which is the most desirable if you're managing at a population level, is either using hounds or bait, because you get to see the bear up close before you pull the trigger. And so they tend to have lower female, they pass females over on purpose, so they have lower females in the harvest on those hunts. With a spot and stalk hunt, you know, you're seeing a bear across the canyon, and that might be the only bear you see, and so they're a little less selective on those.
Any other questions from the rack? Going once, going twice. Questions from the audience? Go ahead and come at the mic. State your name for the record, if you would, please.
My name is Bob Brister. I had a question about the bear cubs left over from the hunt. Do you have any figures on how many bear cubs have been left over in the last, say, 3 years, and how many more or less you'd anticipate seeing with this proposed hunt?
Sure. It varies a lot, Bob. We had 7 bear cubs this year that we rehabbed up in Cache Valley. They weren't all hunt related. We know, you know, one was related to a hunter taking the female and not realizing it had a cub until after he'd taken it. We had a second one that was an illegal take, took the female illegally. Had a couple that some twins that came in because the sow had been hit on Highway 6. And then we had a couple that showed up in towns. And with cubs, we, you know, we will rehab cubs, try to re-release them where they came from. And so this year we had 7. Last year we had 0. The year before we had 0, and 4 years ago I think 5. So it varies a lot, and some of it varies according to weather. It's just, you know, if the sow's not getting nutrition, and just seems to kind of be hit and miss. So.
So there's no way to tell how much the next hunt,
right? Yeah, it's hard to predict. Although I mentioned this collaring effort where we look at birth pulses, that might help us see when we have a lot of cubs hitting the ground, and maybe we can gear up for it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the audience? Anybody else wants to get a comment from the audience before we get started? Bring a comment card up. First one we have is Dan Cocaine. Go ahead and come up.
Dan Cocaine, I'm president of the Utah Houndsman Association. I sent an email, this letter, to the RAC. If there's any that didn't get it, I have some copies. Everyone saw.
Can you bring me a copy, please? Over here. We'll have one to refer to. Thank you.
So we appreciate the division and the progress that we've seen with bears. The bear population in Utah is healthy, and we feel like that we're the division's doing a good job with it. We support the division's recommendations with one exception, and at the other RACs we've kind of talked about the history, and you all have been part of the history. We a few years ago moved the Book Cliff fall season into October, and one of the unintended consequences of that was this tag that takes more points than an elk tag or deer tag or any tag on the Book Cliffs, was pushed into a season where we had spike hunters, over-the-counter spike hunters out there on every ridge. And so the hound guys found it was just too hazardous to even turn their dogs loose. And you know, we've spent a lot of time with our people talking about being good sportsmen and sharing with everyone and trying to avoid these conflicts, and we feel like it created more conflict, and we've come to the RAC several years asking to switch that back. There was a ton of discussion last year at the board meeting about that, and the decision was 2017 is the year we open the management plan and we look at it, so let's wait until then. This is then. At the discussion group, this recommendation, these dates for the San Juan, the LaSalle, and the Book Cliffs was discussed and pretty much agreed upon by all the parties. And those dates are to change those seasons to August 6th through November 16th, with hound hunting restriction dates of August 18th through the 24th. That's the opening of the archery deer hunt, and then September 8th through the 25th, and that's the end of the elk hunt and the archery elk hunt and the you know, you call it the big bull rifle hunt. The idea was that it's a compromise, so all the sportsmen can be on the mountain together. That, you know, there's just not enough mountain and not enough days in the year to balance, so everyone can have their own time on the mountain. We feel like this is the time to take this action and to adjust these seasons to try to avoid the conflicts. With the LaSalle, it takes about 15 points to draw that bear tag, and it's easy to draw an archery deer or elk tag, and so we don't think it's very fair to cut the permits in half on this very good coveted unit to try to avoid the conflict. We feel like this will help avoid the conflict also, and we'd just ask you to accept the division's recommendation with the exception of these dates on the LaSalle and the Cliffs and the San Juan units. Appreciate it.
Aaron Johnson.
My name's Aaron Johnson. I'm the Vice President of the Hound Association. I live in Weber County, so I drove a long ways to come talk to you guys today. I helped on the bear committee a little bit. I met with Darren. I spoke to a lot of the different sportsmen's groups, and I just want to let you know that the letter that the Houndsman Association drafted and emailed to you and that we presented tonight is also supported by the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation and Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife. They'd also like to see these changes take place. I wrote a couple of notes when some of the questions were going on. There's been some talk about complaints, so I spent a little bit of time on the LaSalle's, and I was there last fall, and every chance I get to come down in the summer, restricted pursuit time, I come down. For about 3 or 4 years in a row now, I've had a chance to come down, and I can say, for me personally, I've had zero run-ins with any type of outdoorsman enthusiast, whether they're a hunter or just someone up there enjoying the mountain. It's just been the opposite. This last fall when I was down there hunting with a friend, we took 2 or 3 bow hunters into Bear Tree so they could take pictures of it. We had a humongous bow camp. There's a small city camp next to us, probably 7 or 8 trailers. They'd been going there for years, and they came over and their kids played with the puppies and they got to know us. We exchanged phone numbers. We had a lot of positive interactions. It seems like we focus always on the negative or the complaints that come in. On one occasion, we walked into a bear tree with a family and a 14-year-old daughter had never seen a bear, and the bear come out and ran towards us, and it was wild and woolly for a minute, and I promise you that's the very most memorable bow hunt experience that she'll probably ever have in her life. And it was because we were all outdoorsmen sharing the mountain together. And what doesn't happen is no one writes a letter and says how positive it was with the other outdoorsmen. And so, although there was a lot of complaints, I can assure you that there's a lot of positive interaction that happens among outdoorsmen. Someone talked about these the houndsmen that are out there catching a lion during the bear season. The Houndsman Association does not condone that. We feel like, I think it's Mr. Meekum, that something needs to be looked at, a rule change or a law change to be able to enforce the laws so that that type of activity doesn't take place and make it bad for all the other sportsmen. I think that's about it. I appreciate your guys' time, appreciate the division's time, and I just, you know, I want everyone to know that we can all share the mountain. These dates, and I think Dan hit on it, they give time for everybody to have a little bit of the mountain kind of to themselves. And that's why it's, you know, on again, off again, so to speak, on the dates. We really think that this is a good compromise, and I think it was brought up initially by the division, and it just kind of started to snowball, and the dates were massaged a little bit, but at that Bear Committee meeting, it was unanimous on these dates, on how well they thought it would work. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Guy Webster.
I was the fortunate one, or unfortunate, that I sat in on that Bear Committee two different nights. Time to go up and travel and meet with the different groups, discuss the concerns that we've talked about here. Come up with a lot of different ideas, a lot of different proposals. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that hasn't been discussed here. You know, being able to get dogs back in on the road list was something that was brought up, kind of hasn't gone anywhere. There's still some ideas on that. And some different things, but the biggest thing that we did focus on, and it come from here, you guys all know me, I'm here at the Southeastern Rack every year, and I took this, and I took it to the committee with a very important purpose of trying to address the problem we're having with complaints on the LaSalle's and San Juan. During the course of that meeting, the discussion did come up, and these season dates did get hashed out, and everybody in that meeting was in agreement. Bowman's Association, he actually kind of was ramrodding these season dates. Talking to the biologists, first week of the archery deer seems to be where the most of the deer hunters complain. And a little side note to that, let's keep in mind that archery deer hunt, you can pretty well draw every year. It's not a premium unit and stuff. And then it comes from the archery elk hunters on the last week of their archery hunt. This is taking away pin dogs off the mountain during those times, eliminating them complaints, definitely reduce them, and also goes into the rifle limited entry elk hunts. We think it's a good compromise. Like I said, the Elk Foundation, SFW, Bowman Association, Mule Deer Association, talked to them. Different groups have all in agreement that, hey, we think this will work. This is the year to make changes. We're talking about some changes next year. Well, whether that does or doesn't happen, we'll have to wait and see in a year. But the management plan that you guys all voted for on Iraq, that the Wildlife Board voted on, was a 12-year plan with a review at 6 years, and we fell exactly in line with what that management plan did have. And so we request that you do take this. These dates come right from that committee's recommendation. The Hound Association is fully supportive, and we're wanting to make it. One little side note, you know, we're getting a little bit of talk about, you know, why do we want to have dogs in October? Let's keep in mind that these dates are for a bear tag. There's nothing in this proclamation, in these regulations, that say you have to hunt with a dog. It is you have a tag in your hand. Somebody, if they have this tag in their hand and they hunt with dogs, they don't harvest a bear before the general season spike elk hunt comes along. They do have that opportunity to choose to hunt that unit for spike elk, or if they do have a rifle deer, it gives them the opportunity to take that bear during them times too. There's nothing that says you have to have a dog on the mountain during them times. It's just allowing for more opportunity. And so if that question comes up, but we just ask you to discuss this recommendation as a RAC and make a vote on it. Yeah, appreciate your time.
Chris Dunham.
I'm a melon farmer here in the valley, and bears are definitely a big problem for us. Not only do they threaten our crop, but they threaten us personally. I've had bear come from me to you, big bear, 2 or 3 years ago. And I really didn't know whether he was going to take me or not. But fortunately, he came to the conclusion I wasn't fat enough or something. Yeah, this year, we had workers in the field, and we had at least one bear working within 50 to 100 feet of our workers. several different days. They took three different bears in that field. So anyway, they really threaten our livelihood here. I guess my question would be, what's our, you know, can I shoot them if I see them?
I think maybe Darren should speak to this real quick. I think the 9 mile, the recommendation is to have it harvest objective this year, where it's...
Yeah, it has been. There's a couple of options. There is, so for agricultural damage, you can get a permit to take bears, and you could work through the region to do that. So if you've got chronic problems and you've got bears coming and taking melons, you could get a permit to take
that. Is that an annual permit that we go for?
Yeah, you just need to work.
We have them every year.
Yeah, you just work through the region, and they can issue those. There's a similar program for lions and livestock, but bears, it's focused on specifically on agricultural damage. So get with Guy or your local biologist.
Okay. Thank you.
Brett Bailey.
I'm Brett Bailing. I'm with Utah Farm Bureau. I'm replacing John Keeler in the future. He's retiring, and I'm his replacement. I'm going to echo some of the comments that were made in Richfield last night. We had some sheep producers specifically that were talking about bear conflicts. They have had significant losses in that country. They were talking about approximately 700 head of sheep killed in the last year in their association amongst permittees, and if you do the math on that, you know, you're looking at somewhere around $200,000 to $225,000 in economic losses to these ranchers. Not all of it is due to bears, but a significant amount is, and with the increase in bear populations, we are seeing more complaints from farmers and ranchers like Mr. Dunham, and we propose that you increase the permits to the maximum level allowed within the plan. In addition, we also would ask that you look at moving some of those units that are in the moderate or light category into the liberal category, so that in the future you have more leeway to take care of these problem bears. And as Mr. Dunham addressed, a lot of times the farmer or rancher, they have a conflict with the bear in the spring and in May or June, bears are killing sheep. It's hard to get somebody there to document the kill. So a lot of these statistics we don't feel are reflected because a lot of them are not reported accurately. So we think the depredation tags need to be increased. And we think the bear population, I mean, based on the statistics, if you're going from approximately 1,200 bears 15 years ago to 3,400 bears, I mean, obviously we're having more conflicts. We've got the anecdotal evidence and we've got some more statistics, but we think that maybe there's a better way to measure that. Because obviously we want the sportsmen to take as many bears as they possibly can, and we also want them to take as many depredation tags as allowed within the plan. But we think that if you're only increasing the permits by 102 and you got a 50% success rate, you're only going to take another 50 bears, but your trend is clearly going up. So on a long-term basis, we would really appreciate the assistance with the conflicts with agriculture. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bob Brister.
Bob Brister, my concern is that wildlife watchers' interests are not being heard or represented. When you have an increase in the number of bear hunts, then there's less opportunity for wildlife watchers to see bears, obviously. The division has a public trust responsibility to the entire public. There's a lot more wildlife watchers than there are hunters, and I ask you to take our interest into consideration as part of the public trust. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, with that, we'll move on to comments from the RAC. Sanitary for me to make a comment.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make one comment. recognition of the Utah Houndsmen's Association and their emphasis on ethical behavior. And you know, they denounce the bad actors. And I'm pretty certain that there ain't a bad actor among them. They're all ethical, fine, upstanding individuals. And what Daryl brought up about having unlicensed guides, I think that that is something that does need to be addressed. I'm a licensed guide. I pay my dues. I do what I'm supposed to do. Daryl has been. I think you still are. Not no more. And, you know, Guy Webster, and not only does Guy run his hounds, but he guides for deer and elk, sheep, whatever else, too. And I think that, you know, it's a black eye with the with regard to the general public on hunting and guides in general, those that don't get licensed and those that don't behave according to the rules and they step outside the lines. And I would encourage the division to do whatever's possible in conjunction, you know, partnership with DOPL or whatever else to get that addressed. And then I had a question that I kind of a comment, so I reserved it for this point. Maybe you could speak to that, Darren. With the season dates being so weird on the book cliffs and not just being in line with what the recommendations clearly have been.
Yeah, the committee, I feel like, you know, we did adopt some things that came out. Some other things came up that we felt like we needed to look at moving forward. But with this specific, most of the discussion centered around the book cliffs. And so this season structure that the houndsmen are talking about was primarily focused on the book cliffs. And the difference between that and the LaSalle's and San Juan, obviously, we'll let Guy weigh in. But if I can get it right, Guy, is on the book cliffs, you have kind of a separation in time and space in the fall. So if you're hunting bears, you're not necessarily on top of guys hunting other things. And so that's why they put their fall season late. They felt like the bears are high, the deer and elk are low. My understanding is on the LaSalle and San Juan, that's not necessarily the case. And so if we adopted the framework on the LaSalle's and San Juan as proposed, we'd be putting a late fall hunt, an October hunt, on top of general season deer hunters and elk hunters that hasn't been there yet. That'd be a new thing. And given the amount of concerns and complaints we got this year, we're afraid we may just be asking for more concerns. And so I think as you kind of weigh through this, you know, that's probably something worth thinking about. And maybe I'll let Guy talk more specific about just the structure. I'm going to put you on the hot seat. Especially that October stuff, Guy, if you've got concerns.
We have the LaSalle's and the San Juan already has an earlier start to their season. And we did that years ago to move back that season because of the conflicts we were having during the early rifle elk limited entry season. And so we moved that back and then closed that hunt during the rifle season. So we're already starting a week earlier than the book cliffs. But then with the October, we started the spot and stock seasons where we issue spot and stock permits that they can hunt while they're out during the deer and elk hunt and harvest a bear. And so the success has been fairly low, so we can have a high number of permits, give a lot more opportunity for that season. And so basically the way we adjusted our structures was to try and move some of the hound seasons out of the high conflict seasons that we have. And so and I might go back and say part of the recommendation that we have now is it's been kind of a long history with the fall season. We've moved, had different levels of permits in the fall. We've gone from 5 to 7 to 10, back to 7, back to 5, and then back to 7, trying to adjust and find a level where we don't have a lot of conflicts but can still give as much opportunity as we can. Last year, we increased those permits to 10 in the fall, and we had been at 5. And that seemed, having that many more people on the mountain hunting bears seemed to be what we believed anyway was part of the conflict, or why there were more conflicts, because we just had more out there. And we had reduced it from 10 in the past for the same reasons, because we had 10 permits, we had a lot more complaints than we did at 5. And 5, we'd, you know, get some complaints, but they were not as many as we had this year. So anyway, that's kind of the why we've adjusted our structures we have with our seasons. So, and I just want to echo what Darren said about that October season. There is a concern that if we keep that open for hounds during October, that we're kind of maybe trading problems, and that we've got a lot more deer hunters out on the mountain that time of year. And so I think we could have potential for some pretty good conflicts during those seasons, during that October season. So, and then it would also, like I said, we got our spot and stock bear hunters as well during that October season.
I have a question. Guy, maybe you can address it. I understand the higher number of general season hunters. Seems though that the houndsman proposal addresses a time when you have limited entry hunters in the field. Now, the opening of the general season archery isn't that way, but the last week of the archery hunt is when your limited entry archery hunters are in the field. I kind of like the idea of not having that conflict for guys that's been putting in for 15, 20 years. There's obviously a lot fewer of those people in the field than there are general season, but what does the division feel? I mean, obviously you feel that general season takes a bigger precedence because of the numbers, or you wouldn't have made the recommendations the way you did, I take it. Is that correct?
Yeah, and that's why we've kept it that way, and that's why we started the spot and stock seasons, to give an opportunity to hunt bears during that period of time. And so that seemed to, you know, not have any conflicts during that time by not having hounds in that October period. What was I going to say on the other? As far as the, in talking to our officers, most of the complaints that they were receiving was correct. It was early in the archery deer season or late in the limited entry archery elk season. So that first and last period seemed to be the time where we had most of the complaints that we did have.
Are most of the complaints just the dogs running animals off? Or, I mean, I understand they'll shut down some bugling. Is that it? I mean, if it's just the bugling, then in October it doesn't matter much. Or is it mostly just they saw a dog and didn't like it?
I don't know. I'm going to have Ben come and address that. Those were our officers, wildlife officers, took most of those complaints. And the ones that I heard about were that they felt like they were stalking an animal, and the hounds come running through the area and scared that animal off. I don't know.
Yeah, that's usually what it came down to, is that, well, the elk and the bear are usually pretty close together in the same drainage and stuff. And so if a hunter's out there hunting that elk and then they hear dogs that are running a bear down through the bottom of the drainage, it's just kind of a side effect that happens that the elk decide to head out of the country as well at the same time. And a lot of those complaints were because they could hear the dogs and they're afraid that they were running. I had one complaint that actually came to me that they thought the dog was actually chasing the elk, but there was no evidence to go off of that one. But a lot of it's just because they're hunting in the same drainage.
So maybe just one more thing. We did have a few letters that came to Salt Lake, and the air committee did address a limited entry archery hunter who wanted his permit refunded, and so that's probably we take that kind of stuff seriously, but that's, you know, one individual at that level.
So it seems, just what I've seen kind of social media and everything, a lot of the hunters that I know complained about hounds, it was more of a trail cam thing. Like, they'd get a picture of a dog in the area they were getting an elk consistently, and then they don't get the elk anymore. And so I think that might be where a lot of it's coming from, and archery hunters tend to rely more on that because the elk are actually patternable. But with these hounds, the broke-up season, as the Houndsman Association is suggesting, it seems to me like you've got all that time prior to harvest. A lot of the guys are going to get weeded out. There's not going to be near as many people on the mountain. And general season deer elk hunters, the general season hunts are so packed with people as it is that by the time it gets to those few houndsmen at the end, I don't see as it's going to be that big of an issue. Like, the general season hunters should... I can't see it conflicting that too much, and so I do think that the date, that suggestion is good, that we should maybe look at adopting those dates as the Houndsman Association suggested. Just because, I mean, your elk aren't patternable by trail camera that time of year, so you're not going to have, that's going to eliminate that whole group that's, I think that is the main group, at least from what I've seen. That's just my take on that.
Can you give us like an idea? I mean, you said most of the complaints were coming from those time frames. Can you give us an idea? Is that 90% or 60%? Any idea?
I don't have any of a guesstimate. It's just a guesstimate. But most of our calls come right during when the elk start bugling, when they come through. So I would say probably about 90% of them were during that specific time period right there. We don't receive many during the regular general seasons. We did receive some complaints at the first weekend of the archery hunt, but that's because every archer was out there that weekend, and then it
pool of people
goes down, and then towards the end it gets really a lot more complaints about it.
I just Darren, had, I believe they mentioned that the bear committee all voted unanimously to support this. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it'd be fair to say that when we at the end of that meeting, everybody felt okay with that. You have a clear understanding. Most of this was about the book cliffs. I think there's some parts of this that Guy thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, Guy, especially those weeks off, I think that might have had some potential for further discussion on the Los Salles and San Juan. The northeastern region is still nervous about running dogs during the archery season. They used to get complaints. That's why they moved it out. And then down here on those October hunts, those would be the concerns a division would have. Does that answer your question? Okay.
One comment, more than a question, that I had too is, I think the houndsman can be everybody's best friend, the ag producers as well as even wildlife watchers, because they're doing pursuit tags. They're the ones that can take care of this. And I know just from down on the San Juan, we had a sportsman that drew the spring permit, and a good sportsman, you know, took him years to get it, and he wasn't able to draw, but they had a problem bear. He was able to go in with houndsman, and everybody was happy. So, I mean, those are the kind of solutions that I think we should, the division did it, the biologist down there, stuff like that, just keep working forward because, you know, they're the ones that can really help us.
Any other comments from the rack?
Yeah, I'll run into this one here. I'm going to defer on a couple of things. I think that if the division and the wildlife board don't get a handle on some of the stuff, I mean, the I was going to call it a sad fact, but I guess it isn't a sad fact, but the population of the state's going up. Castle Valley and Moab's about to explode. A mountain down there is going to get used more and more and more, so none of this is going to go away. San Juan's getting ready to put their water in down there, and there's going to be building like you've never seen. I was going to make a motion to put the hounds back in the roadless area. 80% of the bear I ever caught was in the roadless. Caught the first swear in 1981, and I know the premise is why they closed it. And it kind of came about because of a courtesy. We are asked to back out and leave Memorial Day alone. And all of a sudden, guess what? Well, nobody went hunting Memorial Day. Well, it used to be the Kajanas, Meekin, Webster, Christensen's. There's a lot of people hunted it and backed it off. And then when you talked about your criteria, why you did it, doesn't meet it anyway. You're lion hunting on these predator management units. You need to address it. It's going to get worse. It's going to cause issues. It already is. It's an underreported, underdone. It's happening now. I guess I'll ask you, are they taking lions during that? Is there a lion take going on during that?
San Juan, there is.
How many?
I'd have to look. I don't have a number. Or
does Guy or anyone have a number of lions that are taken during the bear hunt?
Yeah, there's something we could look up, but I don't have it for you right now.
Yeah, okay. And your outfitters, it's a joke. It's a joke. It's a disservice to the people in the state that are legal and do what they're supposed to do.
Can I ask what of the other racks agreed to in this proposal?
So far, the northern, or I guess central, was first. They adopted the season structure that the houndsmen are proposing for the Book Cliffs and kept the current seasons on the LaSalle's and San Juan. Northern region did the same. I'm trying to remember which one. One of them, I'll have to look. The southern region adopted the season structure for all three. And then they made some recommendations about increasing permits and some things like that. I could get you specifics, but in with regards to the season structure, that's how it's come down so far.
I have just one more. It's, you know, when he's talking about comments and people getting along and everything, okay, I'll be honest with you, this is the first year that I really had people approach me that were upset. One of them had an elk tag that had his hunt busted up twice by dogs, but I also had the good side too. I also had some say they'd been up there, no problem or anything, but it was more this year than ever. So, you know, we got it. It's going to escalate. You're going to have to deal with it.
Is it ever going to go away, though? You've basically got to hunt from the middle of August to mid-November now with this late muzzleloader deal. Is there a time you can move this to when you're not going to have an issue? No?
I don't think so.
Not in the fall.
On the fall.
I don't know.
The year's still only 365 days long, so
on them all year.
It's going to have to be dealt with.
Let's do it.
Well, I have a couple of questions. Is it kind of new to the RAC? Would it be appropriate for us as a RAC to make a recommendation and ask the board to look at making an action? Making it an action plan to look at the outfitters and the non-licensed outfitters to take care of that issue.
Make a motion and I'll second it.
Yeah, I think that's appropriate.
Let's make it as a separate part from the other stuff, though, if you want to.
And in the same sense with that, the one of those the statute, is it something that the board can do to... Tell me what the other one was, Daryl.
Which is that?
Can't remember.
Lion hunting on predator management units?
Yeah. Is that the one that you said something was a statute? Correct me.
No, the guides, the guiding licensing is right. A statute, and that's done through DOPL. And And I've got some notes here. I need to dive into that and see exactly what's going on there. The lion and bear issue is, if I understand it, you know, if you've got an overlapping harvest objective lion unit on top of a bear unit, anybody who buys a tag over the counter can go hunt lions during a limited entry bear hunt, and that's what they're doing. But, you know, what their dogs put up a tree, whether they're really trying not to take bears or whether they're trying to take bears and say they're hunting lions, that's a problem. So that's one thing we could look at is where it's appropriate to have those units, and that's probably something we need to, that's another thing I have a note on that we need to talk about internally.
Okay, so if that's a statute, is that anything that the board has as far as the licensing? Is that anything that the board has control over? Does it, so make that, ask them to make that an action plan probably doesn't do any good, does it? Kevin, you got any insight on that?
Okay. You know, the board's authority is with regards to wildlife. I think we're going to need a little bit of homework on this. We don't, the division doesn't regulate the licensing of guides, but we do, have authority. The board has authority in terms of hunting and pursuit and things like that. So, again, I made a note. I need to find out some more details and see what we can do, but it'd probably be a good discussion to have. And between now and then, I'd have a chance to do some homework and inform the board a little bit about what's going on there.
I imagine if it's anything like any other license, you know, I'm not a licensed guide, but I've got a license from Doppel. If you see somebody and you know it and you have some sort of evidence, I mean, I don't see how they couldn't get you.
Right, yeah.
Just from what I know from being licensed for what I am, if I found somebody else that was not licensed and in practicing, you know, whether it be whatever it be, and you could actually prove it, I think you could hang them out to dry.
Yeah, I don't.
Well, I'll in reference to that, I spent 7 years running with sows and see them, and they know who they are, and nothing happens. The response you get, and I'm not going to name names, is with the division is it's not a priority. That's Doppel's issue. That's their issue to enforce that. It's not ours. We don't have enough manpower, and they don't. So it's something that needs to happen. And while I'm going here with Eric, I think maybe we ought to defer some of this stuff. You know, we've brought it up. There's issues, this and that. And if we're really going to look into this stuff and he's got it and it's going, you got the bear working group and that, let's give him a chance. Give him a chance to work through some of this stuff instead of mucking it all up this year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we need to look at it a little bit more. But my main point is probably be go straight to Doppel. If the division doesn't have what they need, I'm pretty sure Doppel should. I mean, that's, and if it's not, then that's nothing we can solve here because we don't have any authority.
Right.
Any other comments from the RAC?
I have a couple comments, but it's not anything on the deal. It's mostly, is there any kind of trigger that changed your classification to your liberal harvest? I mean, is there a trigger on, hey, yeah, that, we've had this much depredation on this area, on this unit? Is there a trigger there that changes that, or what changes that?
The trigger would be the biologists in the region just deciding that this needs to be liberal. Now, the plan, under the plan, at any given time, you only have so many units in that category. And I think the max would be 6, which is where we're at now. But whether one needs to come off and one and some another one go in, that's up. That's on the 3-year cycle, and the regions have some leeway, but we have to work statewide to make sure we don't exceed the number in the plan that's allowed in the plan. But on top of that, we're committed to handle depredation issues on a case-by-case basis and give landowners and wildlife services and our folks necessary tools to handle that.
And I agree, and I think you do a pretty good job of it. It's just kind of frustrating, I think, for everyone, not only you know, livestock producers, but as well as sportsmen when these animals are being killed by wildlife services. So, I mean, we're going in, probably looking at going into a real bad barrier, in my opinion. we had zero bear problems on our outfit, and I expect we're going to have some this year because of the like I say, I think we really just look into give the sportsmen the chance to take care of these animals, as well as you know, a guy in the room brought this up to me. Something probably should happen with the Green River Valley as far as turning it into a hunt through the summer. The sportsmen have the opportunity to harvest these bears, and they're not being killed by wildlife services. So I would ask us to look into that. Yeah. I don't know what that would take to restructure that. But as far as the landowners, I think the landowners would be all right with it as long as the private property rights are followed. Don't know that you can do that with dogs, but I think a spot and stalk hunt over the Green River Valley to protect the melon fields is something we really need to look at.
Yeah, I think those are all good ideas. That's something I think that we could talk about. But just we try, even in depredation situations, to get hunters out to take these bears. And what we'll do is, you know, if we've got a problem bear, we'll call hunters, we'll let them know, you got to take the bear. It doesn't matter what size it is, and we've had success doing that too. So even you kind of have the general hunt, but then we try to give hunters, sportsmen, opportunities to take bears that are problems, but if they can do it in a timely manner.
I was going
to
say, yeah, that the timely manner is what worries me, is right, how yeah, much
you got to come today,
how much damage is that bear going to do in that melon patch before you right, can get a hunter from the Wasatch Front here.
And so we'll weigh all of that.
A few years ago, the Farm Bureau came to us with this issue, and we changed our policy to allow melon growers to remove bears through working with us, I guess. So because bears can, in a melon patch, can do thousands of dollars of damage in a few hours or a day or so, we worked with the Farm Bureau and developed the most aggressive tool possible to get bears out of the melon fields or out of the Green River Valley, in a place where we don't want any bears at all. So I think we're there. I think they're happy with it. We're happy with it. It's just maybe letting some of the farmers know we have that tool in place.
So the policy is, though, that they need to go have a tag prior to the bear showing up? Or can they shoot the bear on livestock issues? I can.
Well, Walt can probably touch on this better than I can, but it's... We have a working relationship with Walt and our wildlife guys and the growers before the season starts, and they're in communication. And as bears show up and even start thinking about becoming a problem, we're working together to remove those bears.
Walt, will you tell us what the policy is on it so we're clear and we know exactly where, because there's been some miscommunication on that.
Yeah, the way it's set up is they can get permits, and I've worked with Chris, but I haven't got him a permit. He hasn't asked for a permit yet. The Viteris have permits, and they've actually killed two this year that were in the field, and I encourage the landowners to try to do that, because 9 times out of 10, I'm not there when they see it. A lot of times with the Viteris, when they shot their two bears, it was at noon, in the middle of the day, hot as hell. Their pickers were out there picking, and the bear was out there eating next to them 50 feet away. And so they got the permits. So that's the best way, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go get Chris a permit and get him set up so that he's ready to do his thing, because it's just me by myself. I cruise the fields all night long with a spotlight, and my chances of seeing them are pretty tough.
But they do need that permit
yes,
prior.
Yeah, and once they kill it, they contact me or they contact the office. We come get the bear and we take care of it. And that's the best way to do it. And
appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet.
I'll just get out one more thing.
I don't know.
This year was a bad year for bears. You said a bad year coming. We had a bad year this year. We had those late freezes. We had no acorn crops, no berry crops. So we removed or handled more bears than we have in a long, long time this year. And it happens every so often. It's happened about 3 times in my career We've had a year like this where we have an event that causes a lot of problems with bears, and this was one of them. So last year we were trying to look through the information, and I think last year we only had one that we killed in Green River, I believe. So last year was more of a normal year, but this was a bad year this year.
Any other comments? No comments. We'll entertain motions from the rack.
Oh, I make a motion that we accept the plan with the Houndsman's recommendations, with the exception of the October on the LaSalle's and San Juan's.
You repeat that?
Did I hit that right?
Did you get that right? Read that back. Make sure we got it.
What take the division's plan with the addition of the Houndsman's recommendations, except, and if I'm getting this wrong, Guy Webster, somebody straighten me out, the running of dogs in October on LaSalle's and San Juan's is out. No. Did I get that right or get it wrong, Guy? No, I'm just, does your thing, what, give me the addressing of it in October. If we take your plan as it goes, does that allow running hounds on LaSalle's and San Juan in October?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. I would just take the October hunt out, the deer hunt, and get them out of the general season deer hunt, the October.
So you don't want any hounds on the LaSalle's in October, is that right?
Correct, in San Juan.
Is that what your proposal is, Guy?
No. It's to allow them.
They're running dogs through the general season hunts on the LaSalle's.
I'll read you the Houndsman's proposal. LaSalle, San Juan, and Book Cliffs fall season dates for 2018 be changed to the following: August 6 to November 16, with hound hunting restriction dates August 18 to 24 and September 8 to 25. So basically, it's the hound restrictions would be during when the archery and rifle hunters are hunting the bulls. Is that right, Guy?
Yeah, it's the first week of the archery deer and elk hunt, the last week of the archery deer and elk hunt. The entire limited entry elk hunt, and then it also includes the first 2 days of the limited entry muzzleloader hunt, as written. That was what came out of the committee's recommendations.
You know, I do think that's a good compromise, that there won't be too many conflicts in October, that you're looking at a small enough pool of houndsmen with the people. I would think that we could pass it as suggested by the Houndsman Association.
We've got a motion on
the table. You got a motion, so you got to do something.
We have a second.
Can you restate?
Is the motion clear? I guess that's it.
Yeah.
Just so I'm clear. So basically, it'd end October 1. No hounds during October. Now there is a November hunt currently, and maybe it opens up. Is that what you're thinking on the South San Juan? And then the Book Cliffs would be exactly what they proposed. Is that right?
The Book Cliffs alone. And where I'm coming with that is the public that approaches me all the time, it's deer hunt, deer hunt, deer hunt. They think the division's up in the night over buck numbers, this and that. And regardless of what you say, I think we do this in October during the deer hunt, you're going to have a blow up of complaints. And I guess maybe if you want to do that 1 year and see what happens, but I think you're going to see the lid pop clear off. So I'm not going to change it. We can vote on it, do what you want.
Okay. Did you get Daryl's recommendation? You got it all? Okay. We have a second on Daryl's motion.
I'll second it.
We have the motion by Daryl and second by Jeff. Any discussion further on the motion than what we've already had?
I still need a clarification. I'm not 100% sure I understand. So you're proposing...
The only difference I have from Eric is the San Juan and LaSalle's, the October portion where dogs would be running during your general season hunt.
You're talking only exclude the general season deer hunt dates.
Yeah, when you have all the people on the mountain with general season tags.
And just on the LaSalle and San Juan.
Right. I haven't heard any issues on the book cliffs. Haven't heard a thing.
And you're saying just the use of dogs. The bear hunt can still go on.
Oh, yeah. It's just the dogs.
Can one of the houndsmen explain the benefit of, I mean, obviously, we all want to hunt as much as we can, but of hunting the fall versus the spring? Because obviously, the spring, we don't run into any of these issues. You know, what would be wrong with just throwing all these new tags at the spring where there's very little issue and keeping them in the fall pretty low?
Well, I think the biggest issue is the quality of the hunt. In the spring, you can pursue with a pursuit tag and hunt. And so it's a matter of the quality of the hunt and the number of houndsmen on the mountain. And the proposal to go into October is a compromise because there's only five tags. And so if four of those are drawn by someone who wants to spot and stalk, that's how we brought all the sportsmen together.
Okay, we have a motion made and seconded. Let's vote on it. All in favor? Opposed?
Six to four.
Okay. Motion carries. That included the remainder of the division's proposal, or was that a standalone? That included the remainder in that? Okay. That concludes our business for this evening. We are adjourned.